Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Little Bob here. It's America's 250th birthday, so shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. We've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, and those signature Bob-a-pedic seats. So stop into Bob's Discount Furniture or shop online at mybobs.com, where America shops for furniture.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles, gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. And Mr. Kelly, before you slip away.
Yes.
I see you have a hockey hat on, so that means hockey's kind of cold, ice, and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how come you've got a coat in here? You're saying this place is so cold, you have to wear a coat.
It is very cold, and you have to wear a coat, yes. And it's really nice, though, when it's warm out, because you walk outside, and the warmth is just amazing.
With your coat on?
Oh, no, you take the. I leave the coat here on weekends.
Oh, do you?
Yes, because it's brutal.
I'm surprised that somebody's into ice, can't handle the air conditioning.
Well, you know, I wear a jersey, or as we call it in hockey parlance, a sweater when I go to the games, and they keep you warm.
Just curious. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. Questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex is here. He'll be taking your name and where you're calling from only. He doesn't need to know what you're calling about or anything else. You can tell him hi. I mean, he doesn't mind that. But beyond that, no long explanations because he doesn't know anything about plants. He knows a lot about electronics and big boards and all that other stuff. But plant-wise, so his son had a birthday this past week. Well, actually, it was a little while ago, but they celebrated this past weekend. That's why he wasn't here. So I gave his son for a birthday present organically growing fruit trees because he's only 2 years old, but I wanted him to get an early start on growing fruit trees, apples, pears, peaches, plums. Anyway, we get together, have a roundtable discussion, and on what's impacting your backyard, what's going on. What's that side yard? Why is it always so soggy and wet? Well, your downspouts might have something to do with that. Front yard, specialty garden space, a taste of the tropics, meaning houseplants, potting mixes versus potting soils, improving your soil, shearing and pruning, removal of bugs and diseases, using information, well, to make good decisions. My thoughts and orchestrations hopefully will open or solidify options with the final judgment being made by you. And this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your car, your home, or wherever you happen to be listening. Again, another important player is Alex, and he's producing back this week. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And during the week, I do landscape consulting, where I come to your home. I call it a walk and talk. And I address questions that you may have and also keep my eyes open for things that might be impacting your landscape that maybe you hadn't thought of. And you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, homepage, my email address and phone number. That's where I can be reached. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations. And today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. As I was driving, heading towards, from South City towards KMOX, I thought, where am I going to stop today? I thought, how about Mississippi and Guyer, just with 44 just north of that? Well, there's a garden there that's maintained by McKinley Heights neighborhood. McKinley Heights, meaning McKinley High School, is very close by. And it is in memory of Greg Johnston. When I stepped out of the car, man, the crickets were just going crazy. They were singing songs. I guess they were hoping it was going to rain because they're a little thirsty, but it looks like the rain is at least not going to come right now. This garden space is encircled or embraced by a wrought iron fence, runs all the way to the alley where recently pruned burning bush, boxwood, are looking very good. Whoever pruned them did a pretty darn good job. Must have had a very sharp, you know, I don't know what kind of pruner they had, but the cuts, they weren't frayed at all, and that's what you should expect. There's quite a few pink surprise lilies that are in bloom right now. The lawn had been recently mowed, and the lawn bed space moves around, embraces bed space. There's an arbor there with a super long wooden bench. There's a couple knockout roses, pinks and reds, which add some visual spice. Trees in this garden space include maples, Norway spruce, Japanese maple, dogwood, flowering pear, some of the perennials and ground covers, and shrubs in these nicely mulched beds. Weave through, blooming right now, Sedum Autumn Joy. That's one of the sedums. It's not the classic-looking sedum and elongates and everything else, but it does bloom this time of year. Daylilies are finished, peonies are finished, and they're ready for sleep. There's a patch right on the corner of Guyer and Mississippi of liriope. Man, it really looks good. Very vibrant. Emerald green color. Lamb's ear at the base of a street light. Really? How'd they get that lamb's ear in there? Anyway, there's also other clumps of lamb's ear that jumps through the fence. Opuntia cactus. And yes, there's some of that along the sidewalk as well. There's hostas humming underneath a sweet gum tree. Black-eyed Susans call hooray. There's some blue willow shrubs. Really, you don't see those too often, but they really look pretty good. And then bouncy along with viburnums and spirea as well. The flowering cherries, which are street trees right there, wave goodbye as I head towards KMOX. So, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I see Mr. Kelly's got to put his coat on. You wimp.
I think it's an experiment. They're trying to see how long-term exposure to cold affects the human body.
They're trying to freeze us in time.
Let's hope it close the aging process.
Again, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, if it isn't going to rain today, which I don't know if it is or not, hopefully you've been watering because it has been dry. We had that really soaking wet spring and early summer. And, I mean, we've had some rain, yes. But if you go out and look at a lot of your landscape or try to probe down, you're going to find the ground is really dry. So you got to water for extended periods of time, not 10 minutes in the morning, 7 days a week. That does absolutely nothing except increase the humidity around your house. So probably initially, if you haven't watered for a while, you should water for maybe a half hour and then move it to a different area or go back, turn it off, and then go back a couple hours later and water so you can get the water to actually not just run off the top, because when the ground is really dry, it's just going to run off. You want it to soak down in. You want it to soak pretty darn deep. Ideally, you would get it to 4 inches plus deep into the ground, because that's where all the main feeder roots of trees, lawns, and perennials and pretty much everything is located there. In a top quarter inch or so of the soil, that really doesn't help anything at all. So let's go to the phones. Let's go to West County and go into Joe's house. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Hi. I have a really bad problem with deer. I've been trying to grow some tulip poplars. I've got a couple of them that's about the size of my thumb and about 6.5 feet tall. But the deer forage the leaves and the buds on them. I've tried this liquid fence deer and rabbit repellent to no avail. My dad was a commercial fruit grower and used tankage on his new plantings in the orchard, and he used can you tell me where I might be able to get some tankage, like maybe a Farm Bureau or Farmers Exchange or something like that?
Well, I don't know specifically, but what you could do is there's a company called Hummerts International. They're in Earth City. You might contact them, and if they don't have it, you know, themselves, they may be able to tell you where to head to.
And that name again,
Hummerts,
could you spell it for me?
Hummerts, Hummerts International. They're a horticultural company worldwide. They have a catalog that's probably, multiple hundreds of pages. So they may have the product that you're looking for.
Okay, Mike, I'll give that a try. Thank you so much.
Certainly. Yeah, and also you might try hanging bars of Irish Spring soap and see if that might help.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, whatever works.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. I mean, some people swear by it. Irish Spring soap is a little bit pungent for sure. So the deer smell it, and they can smell it quite a distance away, and it kind of burns their nose and burns their eyes, and that kind of keeps them around. So you would probably want to put something around your trees, maybe 4, 5, or 6 feet around from it, and then hang the Irish Spring soap from, like, fence posts or something along that line.
Oh, I see. Okay. This liquid fence deer and rabbit repellent makes that claim that it burns their eyes. But like I said, it's I haven't had any results with it.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Well, I'll give these two suggestions a shot here and see how it goes.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. And another thing is, you could always sell your house in West County. Move into the city. There's no deer problems. Let's go now to Bob, and his garden or his lawn or his landscape is in St. Louis County. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, Mike, thank you for your show. I'd like to plant some grass seed. I want a wide-bladed, stiff-bladed, tough grass seed.
Well, if you don't mind how it technically looks, look at K31 fescue.
K31 fescue.
Right. Not
is
a blend.
The only one?
This is going to be just a pure K31. It is really a tough, rough grass.
All right, then. Thank you.
Certainly. Good luck with that.
Right.
And make sure you get the soil prepared and everything. You know, top dressing first, then put the seed down, and a seed starter type fertilizer, or you can change a combination on how you want to do it. But make sure, and it would help if you core aerated first, or at least dethatched, so you can get the grass seed in contact with the ground. So.
All right, thank you.
Yep. And Bye. Now let's go to John. Hi, John. How are you? Oh, sorry. Let's go to Tracy.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Mike, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a ash tree in front of my house, and it's not dying from the top down. I don't think it's borers. It has this clumpy black stuff on it, and the limbs are dying. The leaves are all dropping. Can you give me a clue?
Clumpy black stuff. Boy, I sure
it's
don't.
It's kind of like, it looks like cauliflower, but very small, about the size of a golf ball, and it's very crummy.
On an ash tree.
On an ash tree.
Yeah, I'm clueless on that, to be honest. Probably.
Really?
Yeah, the best thing you could probably do is have an arborist come out and take a look at it. Maybe if I saw it, I would know. But a lot of trees are dropping leaves this time of year. You're sure this is not the gall, G-A-L-L? But usually ash trees don't get the galls.
No, it's not like what's on my pin oak.
Okay, so it's something different.
It's something different. And it, like I said, it looks like cauliflower. And then when you grab at it, it's very crummy. You can crumb it in your hand.
I would say run.
Kind of, that's what I'm thinking. But it's killing the tree. I mean, when I break the lower limbs, I can break them, snap them right off.
Well, I'll tell you, if it's, you know, this tree's gone, you know, it's problematic, I would find out what it is first, but I would plan on just having the tree taken down.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good. So,
okay.
Sorry, I wish I knew what the crummy cauliflower's crackly stuff is.
Maybe I'm not describing it right, but I'm hoping. So thank you so much.
Certainly. But yeah, have a professional arborist come out and take a look. They'll be able to identify it probably pretty quickly.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Now let's go to John. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I've got some problems with a holly bush. It's we've had so much water this year that it's like, the leaves are turning yellow and browning and falling off. And I was wondering what I could do to possibly save it for this year.
How old is the tree or shrub?
The shrub's probably at least, somewhere between 7 to 10 years.
Oh, that's not all that old. It sounds like a nutrient problem, especially if the foliage is turning yellowish. And if... We did have a lot of rain early on, but if it was planted correctly, so in other words, the top 10 or 15% of the root ball above the surrounding ground, the rain shouldn't have shouldn't cause that kind of impact, that's actually going to cause the root system to dry. But it sounds like it's a nutrient situation if the foliage is turning yellow, especially if the foliage is turning yellow and the veins are still green. That means the soil pH is wrong and there's not enough iron in your soil. So I don't know if you've been fertilizing it routinely or anything, but if you have been, hopefully you've been using a fertilizer for acid-loving plants, because all broadleaf evergreens, for the most part, need to have an acid-type fertilizer, which would have the iron and the sulfur in it to make the nutrients so the tree could stay or the bush could stay healthy. So it's going to be an iffy type thing. Are the leaves that are falling off, are they in the branches or are they on the interior?
They're kind of on one side, and then there's a little part up on top.
One side, is that backside against your house or something?
No, it was near one of the sides where one of the sprinkler heads was also striking it.
Oh, so you may, from the rain and actually the irrigation system, it may be a little bit wet. But what you can do is pull some mulch back and just see how, see how moist the ground is right there. If you have an abundance of mulch, pull it back. Don't have any mulch around the actually stems coming up out of the ground. And if you're going to put down the iron sulfate, you're going to pull the mulch back, put that on the ground, and then you can put the mulch back. But don't sprinkle it on top of the mulch.
Okay. We'll try that and see what goes.
Right.
But, if you've been doing so good for all these years, then all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes that's, the absolute mystery. You don't know exactly what happened, but this was a very, like you said, severe rainfall amounts the early spring and, early summer, too. So hopefully you can get it turned around.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. And now where should we head? Let's go to Ron. Ron, how are you today?
Doing good, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. We've got a weeping cherry tree. It's about 7 feet tall, rough terms. And over the last year or so, it's developed a branch that is sticking straight out for 3 or 4 feet before it starts to droop. And my question is, can that be pruned? We've looked at it, and it doesn't look like if we take that branch off, it'll affect the appearance of the tree. But can that be pruned? And if so, what time of year?
You can basically prune it now. It's headed towards dormancy. But check to see where this branch is actually coming out of, because weeping cherries are actually three trees that are glued together. One's a root system, one's a trunk, and then one is the umbrella-shaped weeping aspect. So what happens a lot of times is some of the straight growth that's not weeping immediately when it comes out is actually coming off the tree trunk as opposed to the weeping aspect that was grafted together with it. So
yeah, this I think is coming off the umbrella portion.
Is it? And it goes out straight for 4 feet before it goes sweeping down, huh?
Yeah, 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah, it's not shooting up. It's going out horizontal. It doesn't.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I would say, I don't know how long it is, but cut it off in sections, and we're headed towards the dormant period. So I'd wait until the foliage, you know, entirely drops from the tree, and then prune it during the wintertime.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, good luck with that.
Thanks, Mike.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Isn't the crabgrass, foxtail, and all those annual warm season grasses, weedy grasses, they are exploding. I mean, it's just amazing. I walk past some yards, and I mean, let's say the flower/seeds are shooting up, like some of them are like 8 or 10 feet above actually the blades of the weedy grasses. So this is the time of year where all those weedy grasses are producing seeds. They're going to drop the seeds. They're going to lay there until next year. And guess what? Then they're going to explode. So that's why we put a pre-emergent down for these grassy type things, you know, when the forsythia is in bloom. This time of year, though, is when you're going to be putting a pre-emergent down. And for that, that's for all the cool season weeds, all the henbits and speedwells and annual bluegrasses and things like that. So this is the time of year when you should be thinking about, for cool season weeds, putting your pre-emergent down. So those seeds have been laying there since last spring, all the way through summertime. Now it's starting to cool down, even though it doesn't maybe feel like it. And then kaboom! They're going to explode. So let's head over to Vicky's yard. Hi, Vicky. How are you?
I'm great. Last year, I had about 25 little wild strawberries growing, and I thought, oh, good, the birds will eat them and everything. Well, they don't.
No.
And so this year, I've got over 100, and I don't know what to do about it.
Well, are they in your lawn, or are they in planting beds?
No, they're in my gardens.
Well, you can actually, there's certain types of Roundup. I mean, you can use Roundup to kill it, or you can use a weed, you know, Weed Be Gone, because it's a broadleaf weed. The Roundup now is certain, let's say, containers that you buy, actually the rod, the spray rod, will have a kind of a half cone that's at the end of the sprayer, so when you spray, it only goes right down into that. It doesn't have any drift to it at all. So you could do that, or you can paint some Roundup directly onto the strawberries. But another way too is to dig them. But a lot of times the strawberries, they grow like regular strawberries, so they leap. You see the major clump here, and all of a sudden you start to dig it up, and then you realize it's heading out in all directions, north, south, and the east and west. So you got a couple different options, and you just have to be really careful if you're putting an herbicide down that you keep it off your other plants.
I know. That's what I'm worried about. Well, how come the birds don't eat them?
They don't like them.
Well, my neighbor, because I was afraid, who knows, you know. And she said it had no flavor.
Well, I don't know if birds can taste flavor or not, but, you know, it's just not. Most of the birds don't like something that big. So So if they did eat them, the problem would be they'd consume some seeds by doing the same thing. Then when they go to the bathroom, they're spreading it around more and more and more.
Oh, well, I guess that's a plus.
Right.
Okay, Mike, thank you so very
much. Yeah, so in other words, you're going to have to go out there and just be, you know, with the Roundup in a bowl if you want to, and a paintbrush, and step on the strawberries, then paint the Roundup right on it. That way you don't have to worry about any kind of drift whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, it's a tough one. I've got some in my, you know, in my lawn areas, and I've been hand digging them, and I thought I got them all taken care of. And then every time I go out again, I start to see, there's a few more of them. But good luck, Vicki. And now let's go to Bill. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I had a question. I had some mulch that I bought at one of the big box stores, kind of a brown dye mulch, and about a month ago, some kind of spores started growing on it and kind of was all over. So it kind of comes up in big chunks now. And I'm wondering, first, what that is. And secondly, do I need to get rid of all the mulch and remulch it in the fall?
Yeah, to be honest with you, that's some of the problems with us, you know, some of the products that's, you know, let's say they're not tested. I'm going to say St. Louis Composting. They test all their products to make sure that you're not going to get this kind of situation with it. They've had in the past, you know, certain products that have caused what you've experienced, and they just got rid of the entire product. So this is what you have to be cautious of. And some of these spores can be, I mean, some of them are, you know, shotguns, and that can turn the siding on your house black with speckles and stuff like that. Some of them are just big lumps of, like, puffballs and things along that line. So it's difficult to say exactly what it is. What you can do is just go out and rake it on a regular basis and see if you can, you know, keep this from forming. But beyond that, that's about all you can really do.
Okay. Hey, can I have one more quick question? I grew gourds this year.
Ah.
And I grew some gourds, and one of the gourds plants vines went totally down. I think it was the moth that got in there. How long will those should I keep those gourds on the vine now that the one is totally out?
It's really up to you, but they're probably as big as they're going to get. So I would wait until the foliage on the gourds start turning yellow, and then go ahead and cut the gourds off and start drying them.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Certainly. Good luck with that. Yeah, it's nothing more frustrating than when you're trying to put an organic product down and you start to see fungus and molds and whatever else, bacteria's growing in it. So let's see. Where are we headed? Let's go to Greg's yard. Hi, Greg.
Hey, what's going on? Listen, I don't know anything about trees. I got a tree from Home Depot, a peach tree, that is, and I stuck those giant tree spikes down. And I mean, I beat about four of them down. I'm crazy, you know? And the thing shot up there like 2 years ago. And now it's like 12 feet tall. And I got one. This is the weird thing. I got a peach that's growing out of it. It's not like it grew out of a vine or anything, like straight out of the branch.
Well, that's how they normally grow. So peaches on peach trees grow like right off the branch. There is no kind of vine.
Okay, but and you know what? I was just wondering. I hope I wasn't going to kill it by jamming all those giant tree spikes in there.
Yeah, you really shouldn't have done that. Usually, you don't get any fruit on trees. Depending upon what type of tree, there's standard trees, there's semi dwarf, and there's dwarf. Standard trees usually take about any place up to 8 years before you're going to get much fruit production or
fruit production
at all. Semi-dwarf is a couple of years less, and then the true dwarfs is about 4 to 5 years. So it's going to stress the tree out. I'd pull that peach off there and get rid of it, because producing fruit is most stressful thing even a good, healthy tree can do. So I would get that off there, and don't fertilize it with these tree spike things again.
Yeah, my dad was a green thumb. I'm just trying to catch up with him. Anyway, yeah, I should have planted a plum tree at the same time, because I always wanted to make a nectarine. And how do you do that anyway?
Well, I don't know how you make a nectarine.
You don't?
No.
You're the green thumb man. I thought you knew everything.
I think, isn't there nectarine trees?
I don't know. I thought it was a mixture of a plum and a peach.
I don't think so, but maybe it is.
I'm going to look into that.
Yeah. Just look
online. Thanks anyway. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I like nectarines, but I like white nectarines. I don't like the yellow ones. So let's go now to Al. Al, how are you?
Good. How are you this morning, Mike?
Very good.
A couple of questions. One as a follow-up of call of a few weeks ago. So I had a pin oak tree turning yellow, and I drilled the holes, put the iron sulfate in there. But you also said in between those holes to put compost. And I was wondering, I've got leaves that I've been piling in the back of my lot for 40 years, going anywhere from soil up to the last leaf. So would those leaves be good compost to put in those other holes? Or
if you've been rotating this, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But if it's just been a pile of leaves, it's probably not going to help all that much.
I see.
So in other words, compost, you know, usable to make it so it breaks down and becomes functional for the plant material, has to be, you know, turned on a regular basis. That's why they have these composting drums and all this other stuff.
I see. Okay. So a regular fertilizer wouldn't be any good in some of those holes?
Definitely not.
Tree fertilizer.
Just, okay. What you're trying to do with putting compost down into these holes is you're trying to feed the soil. You're not trying to feed the tree.
I see. Okay. All right. Very good. Second question had to do with iris. Seems like in the past, one time I cut those off about 6 inches above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to do that now, or is that something for later, or what?
No, it's fine to do it now.
It is okay.
In the spring blooming stuff, I'm assuming this is traditional flags. You know, once the tips start turning yellowish brown, then you can go ahead and cut them.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a blessed day.
Certainly. And thank you. Yeah, it's, again, healthy soil is the best way to take care of your plant material. To fertilize, you're not really making the soil healthy. You're just making, let's say, the plant material have a surge of growth. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Thanks to the library, St. Louis Public Library, which is just across the street from where we are, for co-sponsoring the Garden Hotline. Let's head over to Mike's yard. Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Mike. How are you today?
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got this large tulip poplar, and it's over my deck. And when I sit out there, there's like a mist coming down. Somebody told me it was aphids eating on it. And anyway, it's a real sticky substance. It gets all over everything. And I was wondering if you could help me with that.
That's basically, they were right, whoever told you that. Tulip poplars or tulip trees or Lariodendron, which is a botanical name, they are just a giant magnet for aphids. And when the aphid feeds, it sticks its proboscis kind of like a needle into the actually leaf. And then when it pulls it back out, it leaves a little dewdrop, and that's what you're having raining down on you. There's really not a whole lot you can do, especially if this is a larger tree. I mean, to do injections and things like that to try to kill the aphids off, that's going to be a multiple-year project because you probably have a million aphids on the thing.
Yeah. Somebody told me that ants, if you can get rid of the ants, that helps. Do you know anything about that?
No, the ants are just there to gather the dewdrops. So once an aphid feeds, then the ant will go, well, here's a nice dewdrop. I'll take that back to the, you know, ant hole and let the queen have a party.
So basically, outside of removing the tree, there's not a whole lot you can do.
No, not really. I mean, especially if it's a large tree. I mean, you could go out and the area over your deck, maybe, you know, try to spray the foliage and try to wash them off, knock them off that way. But probably they're going to be back, but it might give you a month or so.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Certainly, yeah. The aphids are really nasty on the tulip poplar trees, for sure. And if you look at the leaves, they're kind of shiny and they're going to be sticky, so you have the worst-case scenario. Let's see. Now let's go to Kevin. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm good. Hey, I have a question this morning about nutsedge. Is that something that, you know, I've been using kind of a reactive, trying to spray it as you see it come up in the yard, but it just keeps coming back every year, and it's like a non-winning battle for me. I didn't know if you had any ideas on it.
But, you know, if this is specifically for killing nutsedge or nutgrass, then it's, you know, probably you have a whole, let's say, bank full of, you know, Nutsed seeds underneath the ground. And if you're spraying it early, best time to spray as soon as you see it. Because later on in the season, if you spray it, it has a waxy cuticle, and you think it might have killed it, but it maybe not have. It's not killed it entirely. But it's going to be a long, involved battle. And the Nutsedge really likes, you know, areas that have a tendency to be damp. They don't have to be damp, but that's usually where they're going to be most prominent. So it's just going to be, you know, again, use a sedge ender or something specifically for killing the Nutsedge. Other products, other herbicides are not nearly as effective.
Okay, yeah, most of the ones that I've tried, you know, it says also kills nuts, you know, yellow Nutsedge, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah, I would get one that says yellow Nutsedge first.
Okay, and then how does that, is that an annual or a perennial? How does that reproduce itself?
It's basically an annual. I mean, it is. So, in other words, if you left one plant there, it may come back from that spot, but it produces seeds above the ground. You know, if you don't mow your grass enough, there's going to be seeds, you know, coming out of the top. And then there's, you know, as an older, mature plant, you know, gets mature, it could produce seeds at the tips of the root system.
Yeah, because I never actually see seeds on the top of the ground. That's why I was wondering how it keeps coming back every year.
Yeah, if there are older ones that haven't been killed entirely, then I mean, the nuts are right at the, you know, when you dig up one, you're going to see that it has maybe six or seven white roots hanging down. And potentially, if that's an older plant, each one of those roots had a seed. So that's where the trouble comes.
Okay, well, I appreciate your help, and I enjoy your show, Mike. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. Now let's go to Margie. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have a garden-related question because it has to do with mosquito proliferation, I guess you would say. It's the PVC pipe that goes from the sump pump out to the middle of the yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there for almost 20 years, and just this week I noticed that the opening is kind of curved up. And I can fix that because I know it wasn't like that before, but I realized that there's tons of standing water in there.
Right.
And I thought to spray some, you know, mosquito repellent or something in there, and I just wondered if that was a good idea or if there's something better that you might know or suggest.
Well, basically, mosquitoes, you know, they lay their eggs in that water.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when they're, before they actually become adult mosquitoes and come flying out, then they're going to lay in there, or, you know, live in that puddle of water that's in this pipe. So as long as whatever you're spraying in there is going to, you know, kill the, let's say, the larvae, then that's fine. If it's not going to kill the larvae, I'd probably just take a hose and shoot water back in there and, you know, get the thing straightened out so you don't have the puddles of water in the pipe.
Well, just the nature of the PVC pipe, you're going to have, you know, with the ridges, you're going to have standing water in there.
Yeah, I never recommend that flexible pipe. I always say the hard PVC, you know, white pipe versus the flexible stuff.
Well,
that's, yeah, you know, it's a
do
little.
Do you think it would be good to put like a mesh over it so that, you know, nothing can fly in there?
Well, you could try it. You know,
yeah.
It wouldn't
All
hurt.
Right. Okay, thought I'd ask. Oh, I have a question. A few weeks ago, there was a lady on there talking about rent-a-goat, and
oh, yeah.
I Googled it, and all I could find was out in California, and they only do, like, minimum of, like, 2 acres. That's what they called small. And she sounded like she was local, and I just wondered if you or anybody knew, because I would like, you know, I just have a regular-sized backyard, but there's an area there that I would rather a goat, you know, come in and clear if that's, you know, what they do.
Right. Well, basically, there was an article on the Post-Dispatch, I think, on a Sunday issue that actually showed these goats coming out of the trailer. And the lady, I think her last name is Streeter. And what it was is Bayesian lamb, or I forget exactly. It's a florist, but they had a bunch of junk growing along the side of their greenhouses. And they brought the goats in, and they showed after the goats were leaving, you know, how much they devastated. So, you know.
It is local?
Yes, this is a local lady. So, again, it was on the front page of the Post-Dispatch, I think this last Sunday's issue.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to look that up. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said before, you know, I'm working to try to get the goats to climb the trees and do some pruning. I'm trying to figure out how to train those. But President Trump says they're immigrants and they won't let me bring Oh, well, enough. Let's, Ted, how are you today?
Good morning, sir. Thanks for your show.
Sure.
I've got moved into Warrington a few years ago, and we've got large oak trees. And I've lost five of them now and another one ready to go. One day they look beautiful. The next thing you got is brown leaves and the tree's dead.
From the top down.
That's bad. I would get a hold of the County Extension Service, University of Missouri, have them come out and take a look.
Okay. I mean, I'm noticing them in certain areas in Warrington around that area. Trees are just dying, and it's all oaks. I was just wondering what would be causing it.
Yeah, there's several different diseases. Why it's happening there as opposed to other places, but have the have the County Extension people come out, have them take a look, and then they may recommend you have an arborist come out. But without knowing exactly what it is, you can't do injections, you can't do anything. But get somebody out there that knows what they're doing, and have them do an analysis of what's going on.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah, there's not, it's a little difficult without seeing, but yeah, if you're having major trees die that quickly, that is, unless it's just an old age thing, but that's probably not the case. So everybody, you got to hold on because we're going to be going to the news real shortly. So, wow. Mike Miller, Kay, and Mark Garten. No, I'm not going to leave yet. But what you need to be thinking about, again, I'm going to emphasize the fact that the ground is still very dry. So continue to water your plants. Dry soil going into the wintertime, that means it sort of dehydrates, away from the root system. So if we get cold air sinking down into the ground, you could have some root system damage as a result of that. That's why hydrating your soil going into wintertime is really extremely important. And that's for any kind of plant material, woody plant material, herbaceous type, lawns, perennials, everything. They need to have their soil moist. It's really, really important. If you don't do it, you could really kind of have some problems that you could not imagine. So talk to everybody. We still got a few people hanging on after the news. So enjoy. Where's the storms? No storms. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you after the news.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library. Featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, I have to admit the newsroom is cold. I mean, I saw Brian Kelly out there working. You could see his breath.
Well, we call it Ice Station Zebra. So if I outcue my news with Brian Kelly, Ice Station Zebra, you'll know why.
Luckily, the studio that we're... What studio is this? Is this Studio B?
This is Studio B. Yes.
Studio B, I'm sweating.
Yes. Well, come on out.
Contrast and reality.
You can join us in the newsroom.
Yes. Thanks. Welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your questions, comments, or concerns. Back to the goat story, I'm still trying to work on those Moroccan goats. They can climb trees, so I'm going to teach them once I get them to prune trees because they can climb. Go online, Moroccan goats. You can see them standing. There's like four or five or six of them standing up in trees. So anyway, by the way, thanks for having me on your show. And we're here to discuss plant selection, caring for, ups and downs and all arounds, about annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I like sharing my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, opinions is not the only garden path to take. And it's strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is Alex. He's producing, so when you call, all he needs to know is your name and where you're calling from, and that's pretty much it. I spend my week doing a landscape consulting where I come to your home and do a walk and talk, where I answer the questions that you may have, and then I will also keep my eyes open for things that might be impacting your landscape as well. I'll share 40-plus years of experience and can help you with plant care, maintenance, decisions, all that other stuff as well. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3000. 3344. Tip of the trial goes out to several different garden clubs. Richmond Heights Garden Club, and they meet on Dale Avenue. The St. Clair County Garden Club of Belleville, they meet actually at a restaurant in Belleville. And also the St. Louis Hosta Society. Hostas are really looking pretty good. And they finished flowering. Flowering is a little bit, but anyway. Foliage still looks really good. And then the Garden Club of Lebanon. And they meet every Wednesday of the month at the historic Mermaid House. And so that's going to be in Lebanon. So lots of different kinds of garden clubs, but these are four that I just focused on this week. So if you do have questions or concerns, why don't we take a couple calls before we take a break? Let's go to Phil in South County. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking the call here.
Sure.
On the butternut squash vines, the vines just keep on growing. Now, if I cut the vine off so it stops growing, would that transfer the energy of the vines to produce more fruit?
I don't know if it's going to produce any fruit, but if you still have fruit on it, it's going to help that mature so you can actually harvest it.
Okay, that sounds good. Would that also work on tomato plants? They keep getting taller.
Basically, you should whack those down. You want to concentrate it. Any tomatoes that are formed now are not going to have a chance, a long enough period of time to be able to ripen. So get rid of those and just allow the tomatoes that are on there to ripen on the plant.
I've also taken a PVC pipe, about 3 foot long, put a cap on it, build a hole in the bottom, and the bottom of it is next to the roots of the tomato plants. I just pour the water and the plant food down through the pipe to get to the roots. It seems to be working.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting moisture. Tomatoes need a lot of food, and they need a lot of moisture. That's crucial for them.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
Certainly. Good luck. It sounds like you're doing a great job.
We're trying. Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Yeah, it's difficult out there. Let's go now to Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to tell you that you're right about the nectarines. I used to think the same thing as the other caller, that they were a combination of peach and plum, but nectarine fruit itself. But the question I had is, my husband and I were in Florida a week ago on vacation, and they had beautiful crown of thorn plants there. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering whether those could grow in this climate here.
They don't do so well. Basically as house plants, but beyond that, they can go outside in the summertime, but they can't survive our winter times.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I appreciate the information.
Well, thank you. And thanks for your information on the nectarines.
Okay. You take care.
Yes. And now let's go to Terry. Hi, Terry. How are you today?
Yeah. Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. And I have two questions. The first question is regarding hibiscus trees. I have four hibiscus trees that, the type with the braided trunks. They're about 4 or 5 feet tall.
Right.
And I've had these all summer, and they bloomed wonderfully, and they looked great. I have two that have double flowers, and they are on a deck overlooking a pool. And I have two that are down on the pool deck itself. Recently, the two that are down on the pool deck started getting yellow leaves. The leaves would turn yellow and eventually turn brown and fall off, and they've lost about over half their leaves. What is my problem?
Basically, hopefully you're not overwatering those that are down there, and they hasn't got any sort of the chlorine water, splashed into them. But for the most part, the hibiscus, as the days, even though we're not conscious of it that much, are getting shorter, they start dropping leaves. Now, why the ones up on the deck are not dropping leaves yet as opposed to the ones that are down on the pool deck, it's tough to say, but this is something that's, routinely happens this time of year.
Could it be a heat problem that there's too much heat coming off of the pool deck?
Generally, if you're keeping them moist, in other words, watered, it should not be a problem because the heat is not really, if you got it, do you have them actually sitting on the actual concrete or whatever the deck is, or do you have them sitting on the side?
I have them sitting on the paver stones, And I have kept them moist, and I actually sprayed them with a disease control, thinking maybe they had a disease.
No, it's not a disease. It's more environmental. It's Mother Nature more so than anything.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
Why when people bring them inside, because the days are shorter inside and less intense light, even by, if they're right next to a window, they're going to have a tendency to drop leaves all winter long.
Okay. My other question concerns getting plants to flower that I've wintered over in the garage. I have calla lilies and Mexican petunias. The calla lilies, I let the foliage die, and I bring the pots with the bulbs into the garage.
Right.
And the Mexican petunias, I bring the pots with the foliage in the garage, and when it's a warm day, I open the door and let them get light, and I have them by a window. And the next year, they look beautiful. The foliage is great, but I get no flowers. I mean, the calla lilies get giant, but I get no flowers. What am I doing wrong?
Are you fertilizing?
Yes.
Okay, you're doing everything right. So, again, it's just a question of Mother Nature as much as anything. You're not potting them up in bigger pots, are you?
No.
Okay, so you're doing everything you possibly can do. So why they're not flowering, it's a little bit difficult to determine, but you're doing everything exactly as you should.
Yeah, it's strange because the foliage on the calla lilies gets huge, just no flowers.
Right.
And the Mexican petunias will get maybe one or two flowers, and that's it.
Yeah, that's, it's just a question of who knows what that's making it so you're not getting the flowers.
I wondered if maybe the calla lilies have to freeze or the bulbs have to get very cold because my garage does not get very cold.
No, they don't have to get that cold. Because,
okay.
So there's, in other words, like kind of elephant ears and and cannas and all that other stuff. So they don't need to go through a freeze cycle.
Well, maybe I should fertilize more often. Somebody told me because you water, you wash out the fertilizer and you need to keep fertilizing all the time.
Absolutely. Anything in a pot, every time you wash, you're flushing, potential nutrients out as it goes out through the bottom drainage holes.
Okay, well, maybe next year I'll just try to fertilize from the beginning every time.
Yeah, and also get a fertilizer, that's related to blooms. In other words, to flowers.
I did that.
Okay.
I did that. And the Mexican petunias, should I cut? Would it be better to cut the foliage back to the pot level and then let it start anew? Or
I wouldn't cut them going into wintertime, but when you bring them outside, I'd cut them at that time.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. Mike Miller, KM Morris Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
I had an email during the week, and the gentleman said, he's heard me last week, or he heard me whenever, about talking about pre-emergence. He thought there was a pre-emergence specifically for broadleaf weeds. Pre-emergence, they don't care what kind of plant it is. Pre-emergence create a chemical barrier on the surface of the ground, and then when any kind of seed germinates, it doesn't matter what kind of seed, it kills the seed at that time. So whether it's a grass, whether it's a broadleaf, it doesn't matter. It kills seeds that germinate, whether it's lawn, whether it's anything else. So this is a time of year where you're going to put your pre-emergent down to control annual cool season weeds like henbit, like chickweed, like annual bluegrass, prickly lettuce. There's a type of speedwell that's an annual. There's a rabbit's foot clover, shepherd's purse as well. So this is the time of year to have your lawn service or yourself head out to the garden center. Tell them that you want a pre-emergent to put down and read the label, follow the instructions on how much it's supposed to cover and everything else. So there is not a specific type of herbicide for just broadleaf weeds. They'll kill any kind of seed that germinates. So let's now go to Joyce. Joyce, how are you today?
Yes, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a couple of questions. One of them, and mostly it's on hydrangeas. I've got hydrangeas all around my house. So the biggest one is about 4 by 4 feet and beautiful broadleaf, but it doesn't flower. And then I have them all around the house. So some are shade. Some are partial shade, and some are more full sun. Then I've got, and they're probably the type of hydrangea is something someone gave me as a
gifts from a flower shop, and I just transplanted them, but I'm not really, really sure. And then I've got a couple of really pretty lemon daddies. I just love that yellow green.
Right.
But they don't flower either.
I would say it's probably nutrient related as much as anything. How old are these plants?
The lemon daddies are probably 4 years old,
yeah,
maybe 4 or 5, and the other ones are older than that.
Yeah, so they've never bloomed at all?
No, they have bloomed, but they don't bloom very much.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get one little bloom on them, and the ones on the north, that the big broadleaf, they have maybe 2.
Okay, what
I
do...
Because I would love to take them when they flower, and you can tell me when I should cut them off.
So yeah, don't do any pruning at all. Leave them alone. Okay. No pruning whatsoever.
Okay.
Get a soil test done. Find out what the nutrients are, and then do an adjustment with the fertilizers that you're going to put down. Hydrangeas in general like an acid-based fertilizer.
Okay, acid-based. Okay.
Right, but get that soil test done and find out what's going on. How close are they to your house foundation?
Some of them are within 2 feet.
Yeah, see, the alkalinity of your foundation, of the concrete of your foundation, makes the pH really high, and that may be impacting their ability to flower.
Okay. The other one is probably 6 feet from the house, but
yeah,
3 feet from sidewalk.
Yeah, see, so the leaching of the pH from the concrete, you know, can have an impact on them. So
okay,
get that soil test, find out what's going on.
Okay, and my other question is, I would love a small flowering tree or bush about 15 feet tall, and I've seen these hydrangeas, we go back to hydrangeas, and they're really pretty, but then I see them bend down and break, and so that may not be a good choice. I've tried crepe myrtle also, and they're kind of iffy also as far as being as pretty as what I like them to be. So I was wondering if you could suggest one. It's partial shade only because of the eave of the house that faces north.
Okay. Look at a tree called fringe, F-R-I-N-G-E, fringe tree.
Okay.
And just, you know, see what you think of that.
All right. It flowers?
Yes. White flowers.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's a little bit unusual. I mean, you have the classic dogwoods and the red buds and things like that, but a fringe tree is something that's a little bit out of the normal.
Okay, and that would go right in front of the house bed. I mean, is it going to be too wide?
Well,
I've got a 4 foot. My bed is about 4 foot.
That's too, yeah, it's too narrow.
Oh, okay.
There's not going to be a tree that can really fit into that space, to be honest.
How about a tall bush, flowering bush?
Let's see, on the north side, there's nothing going to be, you know, look at Itea, sweet spire. They're not going to be tall, but they're going to flower for an extended period of time.
I-T-E-A?
Yes. Itea is the genus, and sweet spire is a common name.
Sweet spire. Okay.
And then there's another shrub to look at called abelia, A-B-E-L-I-A.
Okay.
And take a look at that one. The abelia is actually evergreen.
Okay.
And see what you think about all those.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mike. Certainly. I love your show.
My pleasure, and thanks for hanging on as long as you did. Now let's go to Dave. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi, Mike. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
Can you hear me good? I'm on a cell phone.
Yes.
Anyway, I have 3 suggestions. I heard you earlier talking about the Irish Spring hanging from, you know, I like to take the Irish Spring, run it through a cheese grater, and you can broadcast it throughout your yard.
Ah.
And it provides a human scent, which is what keeps the deer away. There's another method that works really well. I have 2 more. But the pure cleaning ammonia without lemon, you can take a piece of wood. It can be a 2x4, a piece of driftwood. Soak it down with that and put it at the base of your plants. And also take that spray bottle and broadcast it throughout your yard, which everything that breathes finds ammonia obnoxious to breathe. And that works
too.
Very well. And the third method is something I like to call low-flying lead, which also provides a tasty meal for the dinner plate.
that may be a little too brutal for some people.
Right, that's very true.
But thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your show. I listen all the time.
Well, thanks for your insight. That's running it through a shredder. I never even thought about that. I've always just hung the.
It works really well. And the ammonia, it'll green up your grass. You can broadcast it with a spray bottle. I like to put it on wood because it doesn't evaporate so quick, and that wood will hold that scent. And it lasts a lot longer. If you have a privacy fence, you can spray your privacy fence and do like a border control, to keep them out.
Right.
And if you live in a suburban area, the deer are probably used to the human scent, so the soap becomes less effective.
Right. Well, thanks.
But you have a good day, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Sam's yard. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm newly relocated to San Diego. I'm from San Diego to St. Louis, and I've got a problem with moles eating up the lawn. Can you give me some suggestions how I might rid the lawn of moles or voles, whatever?
Well, moles don't really eat lawn. They're looking for earthworms. So you must have a nice yard or else the moles wouldn't be there because earthworms are only in good landscapes. So that's what they're tunneling for. Now, voles can use a mole tunnel. Now, they will eat root systems and things like that. But moles also eat grubs. They eat any kind of insects they come across. But grub control does not get rid of moles. Really, the only effective way is using like a Victor Spear or choker loop traps. That's the most effective way. And wait, flatten all the tunnels, see which ones pop up, and then set the traps along the ones that have popped up. So in other words, that means the one they have used or are currently using, and that's the best thing you can do as far as getting rid of them.
Okay. I appreciate it. I appreciate your show. Thanks for having me on.
Well, sure. My pleasure. And, some people have called in and talked about putting mothballs in the tunnels and doing several things. And then there's somebody that's called in and said, that's too brutal to kill him with the traps, but you got to go after him if you got to go after him.
Right. Okay. Thanks for the advice.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, you got house plants outside and you got to get them ready to come inside. We'll start watching them and looking at them closely, insect-wise and everything else. And this is the last month to do the fertilizing on your house plants before you bring them in. So, except the ones that are going to flower or in flower, you want to keep those well fed. And this is also the time of year where you could start doing your point. This poinsettia thing to me, my mother, she didn't do anything very special. She didn't stick them in a closet for 14 hours a day where it was totally black and all that. And hers really, probably I'd say at least every other year, the bracts, so in other words, those leaves turn colors. So you can do that extreme stuff if you want to with the poinsettias. Personally, I just sort of buy new ones every year because I'm too lazy to do all that crazy stuff. But anyway, enough of that. And now let's go to Elaine. Hi, Elaine.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions for you, and I know that one of them has probably been on the air before, but I actually just turned into your station. I haven't listened to it for years, so I'm really excited about all the information I'm learning. And my first big question is, I have two beautiful oak trees in the front of my house, one on each side of my driveway, and my neighbor across the street noticed that one half of my oak tree is losing its leaves, it's turning yellow, and it looks like it's got like little holes or something in the leaves. And there's some kind of a disease on it. Can you give me any information on that?
Basically, I'd have without seeing it, it's a little bit difficult. But if the leaves are, discoloring, that could be nutrient-wise. So in other words, what's in your soil? So you should probably get a soil test done, find out what the soil pH is, what the nutrient level is. That could be having a huge impact on anything. But, oak trees or any kind of tree can be impacted by what's in the soil.
But it's only half of the tree. I mean, you can actually look down the middle of the tree and see half of it that's losing all its leaves. I have brown leaves all over my yard, like fall. And I didn't think that oak leaves, a lot of times, they don't lose their leaves till the spring.
Well, sometimes that's the case, but it's not going to be always the case. Every year is going to be different. because of just the way Mother Nature is. Now, this is okay. A side that's losing its leaves. Is it next to the driveway? Is it next to this? There's
nope,
all kinds
it's
of...
It's next to the rest of my lawn, right. Yeah. So the one on the other side of the driveway seems to be doing okay.
Okay.
And then just the part that's losing its leaves is the part that's furthest away from the driveway.
Yeah, I would say... I'd get an arborist to come out and take a look.
Okay, are there any diseases or anything going on out there that need to be aware of?
Not that I'm conscious of, not that it's, has this kind of impact.
Okay. Okay, and that's good to know because I thought there was something out there. Might be something out there that I'm going to lose my tree and I'm a little concerned about that because they're beautiful. So.
Right.
Okay. It took me 25 years to get them this big. So, okay, and they're not old, obviously, for oak trees. So.
Right.
Okay. And question number two is I have, I'm growing tall zinnias around my driveway, and they're beautiful, but a lot of them aren't staying tall. They're falling over, which they never really did before. They're kind of leaning to the side, and some of them, and I don't know if it's from me fertilizing and not getting down to the ground as much as I thought I was, are getting brown leaves. Is that the time of year for these to start losing their leaves as well?
Absolutely. The days are getting shorter, even if we're not conscious. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, it was still, the sun was only going down, and that was past 8:30. Now the sun's going down at 7:30. So shortness
of the days. I have noticed that, by the way. I have. Okay.
So that's probably, again, it's Mother Nature as much as anything.
Okay. Okay, so neither one of them are any, well, at least the zinnias are nothing to worry about.
No.
And when the leaves die off, can I break those off and let them fall back into the ground? Will they come again next year? Or I've heard that before, that if you take the brown leaves and the seeds that are inside of them and just, break them up, that they will come again in the next year. Is that true?
Well, it's not the leaves. It's actually the flower. That's where the seeds are.
That's what I mean. The dead flowers, yeah.
Yeah. You could do that, but I wouldn't depend upon that because we never know, again, what the weather's going to be like. Gather some of the seeds, flower heads, and put them in a paper bag in your garage or something for the wintertime. So you have, let's say, a secure safety net.
Okay. And I've been doing that. And then next year, do I just sprinkle them on top of the ground or do I dig holes? Like I'm planting them.
No, you don't. The seeds can just make sure the soil's prepared. Obviously, you've got the zinnias in a spot, and just sprinkle the seeds on top of the ground and just probably tamp them down a little bit.
Okay. All right. That's what I'll do. Thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate your show. I'm going to start listening more when I'm in town.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. So let's
thank
go.
Thank you. Take care.
Sure. Let's go over to Ray's yard. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Gosh, I've been listening to you for as long as you've been on the air. I got a row of Althea, Rosie Sharon.
Right.
Bushes. But what kills them? Nothing really drastic, one or two over the years. But I don't know. I get what I did, I got them as little seedlings, and so I planted them fairly close, and then I spread them out a little bit. But how far should it? Oh heck, they're 7-8 foot tall, 10 foot, and I trim them every year. But should I take out some and spread them out even more, or what?
Well, that's probably what the case is. Some of the more aggressive ones are going to overshadow the ones that are not as aggressive, that are in between, and so consequently, that because they're not getting as much sunlight, that the plants need sunlight. There's no getting around it. To take, to use those nutrients and moisture coming up from the root system, and sun goes to the, hits the leaves, and the leaves make chlorophyll, and that's the food. So these are probably just kind of being starved.
All right. Well, I guess I'll move them over, or take some out, or something, because they're beautiful. They're pretty. They're like weeds. My God, they grow like mad.
Yeah, they get huge.
Thanks, Mike. Sir. That's about it, though. I mean, I got a ton of questions. That's all right. You got other callers. Thank you.
Well, thanks.
Program.
Yeah, the Rose of Sharon is one of my favorite plants, and it's a plant that I remember most as a kid because, before we moved to Ellisville, we lived in the city, in South City, in Flat Avenue, and consequently, there was quite a few Rose of Sharons along there. And when those petals, after they finished flowering, would fall onto the ground, I sort of collected them and took them to my mother, and she said, "What are you bringing this stuff home for?" Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep. And now let's go over to Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I have two questions. First of all, I've got a sweet gum tree. What is the life of those? It's starting to get a lot of dead little branches in it.
Yeah, dead wood can happen, but, I mean, they can go on and on and on. I mean, there's some in the botanical garden grounds that are probably 60, 70, maybe 80 years old. That's not to say everyone, you know, throughout the entire region is going to last that long, but probably 40 to 50 years is, I would think, average.
Okay, well, mine's about 25, so it's got some life in it yet.
Yes.
Okay, another thing, I'm going to replace all my landscaping around the north side of the house and the east side of the house. And I was wanting something that flowers, that would be not get very big at all. I've had azaleas there. Well, they don't do very well. They haven't. They've just, the last 2 years, they've been blooming in October instead of in the spring. So what would you suggest in a flowering?
Probably I would look at, there's abelia, A-B-E-L-A. This, I mentioned this to a lady in the, you know, in the first hour. Abelia, and then the variety is Edward Goucher. It flowers pretty much all summer long, smaller flowers. It's a smaller shrub. Then there's a sweet spire, which is Itea, I-T-E-A. Take a look at that one.
Okay.
And then I would look at Nandina. N-A-N-D-I-N-A, which is a heavenly bamboo. Okay. It's not a bamboo. It doesn't flower all that much, but it has very colorful foliage.
Okay.
So,
And then on the east side, what would you suggest?
I would say, you know, I would just repeat it.
It's okay, the same thing on both sides?
Right.
Okay. And any kind of a small shrub? Have you heard of the bowling ball shrub?
Bowling ball?
There's another name for it.
No, I don't.
They look like they're just round.
It might be a globe arborvitae.
Oh, I bet that's what it is. Are they pretty hardy for this area?
Yeah, I mean, I recommend them a lot because they don't take any pruning. It just makes sure you get the Hetzi, H-E-T-Z-I-I, Hetzi variety, because it's only going to get about waist high. Some of the non-dwarf ones will get a foot taller than that.
Okay. My daughter had some dwarf. I think they look like dwarfs. They're just not very big at all, but... But they're only 2 years old, too,
yeah.
So I don't know how big they grow.
And then if you wanted to, something that grows straight up, get the Hicks, H-I-C-K-S, Hicks U, so it'll just grow straight up pretty narrow, then you can just control the height.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, let's head over to Ron's yard. Ron, how are you?
Doing fine. How are you doing today?
Very good.
My question is about tomato plants that are staked and they're over 4 foot tall and just loaded with large green tomatoes, but they're not ripening.
Well, it's kind of late in the season, so you haven't had any that ripened all season long?
Well, maybe a half a dozen throughout the season, but they're just all loaded and staying green.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably, what I do is you pick, let's say, half of them, get rid of them, and see if you can get some of the other ones to ripen up. But, I mean, we're getting towards the end of the season. That's why this time of year, if they hadn't had any, if they were just now setting the fruits, I would say don't let it happen, get rid of them. But that's probably what I would do is take or get rid of half the green tomatoes and see if you can get some of them to ripen. Also,
okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, are you using tomato food?
No, haven't been putting any food on them.
Yeah, I mean, that shouldn't really, if you got fruit set and everything else, the fertilizer helps a little bit, but, and they're in full sun, correct?
They don't get the morning sun, but the rest of the day, because they're closer to the house.
Yeah, so are they getting like at least 6 hours of sun?
That's correct.
Okay, so 6 hours should be adequate. But I would say get rid of half the fruits and see what happens.
All right, appreciate it very much.
Yep. And
thank you.
My pleasure, and let's go over to Carol's yard.
Oh, Mike.
Yes.
I have a question. I bought some product to get rid of nutgrass in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
It does a real good job. It kills the nutgrass, not the grass.
Right.
But now I find I have nutgrass growing in my daylilies. If I spray it there, will that kill the daylilies?
No. It's specifically targeted, formulated for going after nutgrass. It doesn't impact other plant material.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Certainly. And now we're headed over to Kevin's yard. Hi, Kevin. No, let's go to Teresa. Oh, Kevin. Okay, sorry.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
The gentleman that called about the ammonia in the yard for deer, do you think that would work for rabbits? And did he happen to mention how much of a dilution he made with the ammonia?
No, he didn't really mention that, but probably you could go online and find out. As far as that goes, and I don't know if it would. It should work for rabbits. It should, any kind of wildlife should, you know, like be repelled by the fact that there is ammonia there. Have you tried some of the other repellents and not been satisfied with them?
No, I haven't. I did the deer and rabbit thing. That's worked real well for a friend of mine, but my yard not so much. And they're starting to breed, and there's a lot of them. And I haven't gotten a bean plant yet, so I've had to stake and. Put fences around my garden to
try and get some
vegetables out of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll look online then. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just take a look at it. And also go to the Missouri Botanical Garden, mo.bot.org, and see if they've, you know, if they can give you some kind of formula for mixing things up. And now let's head over to Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Yes, I'm trying to find out. I understand I'm supposed to use pre-emergent both in the fall and in the spring.
Correct.
And if that is true, is there any particular kind that you recommend?
Basically, if it's a pre-emergent, it's a pre-emergent. So no name brand or anything else. I don't think there's one. As long as it's formulated for being a pre-emergent, it should be fine, whatever you get.
In the spring, we use something called Halts. Is that a pre-emergent?
I think it might be, but I'm not positive.
Okay, so the last application in the fall and the first one in the spring should be a pre-emergent.
Yeah, the pre-emergent, basically you're putting down this month, you know, for the cool season weeds, for the henbits and the, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's what the cool season weeds are what's going to be germinating real soon. So that's going to be the annual bluegrass and the chickweed and things along that line.
Then if I put the pre-emergent down now, do I need another application of something else in the fall?
No, this is basically to get rid of the cool, because some of the cool season weeds, seeds could be germinating right now. That's why mid to late August is when you put the pre-emergent down for the cool season weeds.
Great. Thank you very much.
Certainly. And just realize that you cannot put down a lawn, you know, grass seed because it kills anything that germinates. Now let's go to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I've had a really good year with my grape tomatoes and my full-size tomatoes, but I don't get much edible fruit until, like, after the 4th of July. Trying to come up with a shortcut. Can I, if I just take some of the seeds from that fruit that I'm harvesting right now, will that automatically germinate into a viable plant next spring once the weather warms up and that kind of thing?
Well, no. I would say don't do that. I would say buy the plants, you know, as plants had already been germinated. But look at a, you know, maybe early girl or something. That may be giving you fruit a little bit early. But understand that tomatoes take like 90 days from the time they're planting before you're actually going to start getting any tomatoes off of them.
So therefore, what you're saying is that mid-July, early to mid-July is not late?
No, it's not at all. But, you know, again, take a look at early girl and see that may only need 60 days as opposed to 90 days to be producing, you know, fruits that are going to be, that you could harvest.
And it doesn't necessarily do any good to do something from seed,
no.
You know, under a lamp or any of that kind of thing?
No, not at all. It's still, I mean, it's just, this is genetics, you know, of the plant. It's just like, you know, apples on apple trees and everything else, it takes a long time before you're going to start to get production out of these things.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for the advice.
Sure. And now let's go over to Roland. Hi, Roland. Could you do it kind of quick?
Yes, Mike. A lady called in earlier about her oak tree dying on one side. She might want to check to see where her gas line coming through the house, comes in. Because if it's got a gas leak in that line, it'll kill the tree.
That's true. I didn't even think of that. But, I mean, I know that's something that's been, you know, that's happened to several people over the years.
Okay, Mike.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're going to be able to take another call because we're kind of running out of time. But again, this is the time of year to, if you have a lawn service, talk to them about putting the pre-emergent down. It doesn't have to go down today, but I mean by the end of the month, because these, you know, the henbit, again, the chickweed, the annual bluegrass, the prickly lettuce, the speedwell, that's the Persian speedwell, rabbit's foot clover, shepherd's purse, those are all things that the seeds have been laying there all summer long. They dropped in the springtime when it started getting warm and a little bit before that. And now they go, yay, the weather's starting to get cool and we're going to explode. So just watch out. This is pre-emergent time for those particular weeds. Now, things like spurge and the crabgrass and all that other barnyard grass and, well, not crabgrass, crabgrass, yes. But those, you know, that's when you put the pre-emergent down when the yellow forsythia is in bloom. But now, cool season annual weeds, if you've had a problem with them in your landscape or in bed spaces, think about using a product called Preen, but just use a classic pre-emergent in your lawn areas. So, because it's going to make a big difference. Also, how you care for your lawn is going to make a big difference as well. So, everybody have a great day. It looks like maybe we're not going to have any rain. So, I will see you next week. Good gardening.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The road to the MLB All-Star Game presented by MasterCard starts with you. Who will take the field this July? The power is in your hands. Phase one of the 2026 Konami eBaseball MLB All-Star ballot is open. Vote up to 5 times daily for your favorite stars. And get a bonus daily vote by downloading the Konami eBaseball MLB Pro Spirit game. Top vote getters advance for the chance to be a starter. Cast your ballots at MLB.com/vote. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Identity Refreshing!
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.